if you pick up ADP 6-22, there will be some military language in the ADP. But if you read through it, you will, whether you're an Army civilian or a uniform member, you will get a good feeling about what the Army means by those things. And you will be able to see it does not just apply to the military.
Hello and welcome back to Leader Up, a podcast of Army Management Staff College. Leader Up is a professional conversation where we discuss a broad range of leadership and leader development topics with an emphasis on the Army civilian professional. I'm your host, David Howie. And hey, Leader Up audience, we've got a really, really special guest today. I'm excited about this conversation that we're going to have because we're going to talk about leadership. And our guest today is Lieutenant Colonel Nathan Brannon. And Colonel Brannon is the director of the Center for Army Leadership. And so, Colonel Brannon, thank you so much for giving up your time and coming over and being a guest on Leader Up. Thank you.
Well, good morning. It's my pleasure to be here.
Okay, well, let's start off with a little bit about kind of your background, how long you've been in Cal, and kind of what you see as your role as the director of Cal.
Okay, well, so as far as my history in the Army, I commissioned out of the University of Minnesota back in 2005 as an engineer officer, and then I went into the Army as a platoon leader. As soon as I arrived at my first duty station, I was a platoon leader. Spent some time as the executive officer for that company as well. Did time as a company commander for an engineer dive detachment. And then most recently, I was the battalion commander for the 40th Brigade Engineer Battalion. And throughout that time, I had a variety of staff opportunities ranging from battalion all the way up to division. So my experiences there in the Army as far as leadership experience, I think that those things prepared me at each level of leadership from direct through organizational and then up at the division level, actually getting to observe some of that strategic leadership as well. So those are the three levels of leadership that we talk about in our Army Doctrine 6-22. I've been able to observe those levels of leadership through my professional career. So my last job was the battalion commander for the 40th Brigade Engineer Battalion down at Fort Bliss. And then from there, in June of 2024, is when I arrived at this job as the current director for the Center for Army Leadership.
And so let's talk a little bit about maybe your history or your current situation with Army civilians. And kind of the question is, how have you seen the role of Army civilians change over the years? And then how important are the Army civilians that are in the Center for Army Leadership that do all the work that we're getting ready to talk about?
Well, so first, I will talk about throughout my career what my experiences have been with Army civilians. The first time that I really had interaction with Department of the Army civilians was as an engineer working with the Army Corps of Engineers. I worked with the Middle East District for the Army Corps of Engineers, and I served over in Saudi Arabia. And that was my first opportunity to really see what the special capabilities that Army civilians bring to the table. Particularly with the Army Corps of Engineers, what we were doing in my time there was building an airfield for the Saudis. And what I saw with the interactions of the Department of the Army civilians was that, number one, they were a highly valued and requested resource by the Saudi military. They understood that Department of the Army civilians had a wealth of knowledge and experience. They also trusted them. They knew that these were leaders, they were engineers, they were very capable, and they were also ethical. That these leaders, these civilian Army professionals that were coming and doing the job with me, they were going to act according to the Army's moral code. And I also saw the sacrifice that the Department of the Army civilians made. They did not live in Saudi Arabia, but for months at a time would come over and work in Saudi Arabia with me, being away from their families and making those sacrifices. That was really the first time that I had seen that. Most of the other Department of the Army civilian contacts that I had been in more of an office situation. So that was my first interaction. The second was I was the deputy commander for the Army Corps of Engineers Nashville District. That's in Nashville, Tennessee. I was, as the deputy commander, I had an opportunity to work in a district here in the United States. And for those that don't know, for an Army Corps of Engineers district, there may be 4 or 5 military, and then the rest of the 700 people that work in that district are Department of the Army civilians. Our mission there was to manage so many things. It would blow the mind of anybody that actually went into an Army Corps of Engineers district to see what they actually managed. Just some of the things that we did. They managed the waterways. There's the Tennessee and Cumberland rivers, and they have to manage the flow of those rivers to ensure that they don't flood. They also have to do hydropower. So it's one of the districts that actually generates hydropower for the state of Tennessee, Kentucky, Virginia. So they also do regulatory actions on behalf of the federal government. And then they also have parks and recreation. I think many of us around the country have enjoyed some of the parks and recreation that are available through the Army Corps of Engineers. So just that, and that's not even all that they do. Every single one of those functions is led and run by Department of the Army civilians. Overall, we had a military commander, and then myself as the deputy. But everything that was done there, all the expertise, all the knowledge, all the efforts that were put in were done by Department of the Army civilians. So I was able in that job to really understand the breadth of knowledge and experience and also what they do for our nation.
And in the organization that you're in now, the Center for Army Leadership, what is the breakdown military versus civilian and kind of the role that the civilians in your organization play, their value in that organization?
Well, so right now we have about 30 people in the organization, and only about 5 of us are military. So once again, I'm in an organization where I am the director. I have a civilian deputy, and then my chiefs are, except for one, so I have 3 chiefs, and 2 of them are DA civilians. My military chief is going to be departing this summer, and then we will have all 3 of my chiefs will be DA civilians. All the scientists that work for us are DA civilians. And then most of the people that lead our operations and then also our outreach program are all civilians. So once again, I'm in an organization with experience, expertise, and a majority of that actually resides with our DA civilians and not with the military because there's so few of us.
And we're Army Management Staff College, and we have a relationship with the civilians that you're talking about in Cal, and I love it when I can talk classroom stuff or leader development stuff with the people that are actually putting the doctrine together and all of that. It's really exciting. So thank you for that response. Let's talk a little bit more about the Center for Army Leadership and maybe how the Army got to a point where we recognize that it's important to study the art and the science of leadership.
It's a real pleasure to be able to do this because this was a discovery that I made when I became the director of the Center for Army Leadership. I came into the Army around 2005. The Army values were already in place. The be no do model was already in place. And I did not understand that was not always how the Army looked at leadership. So let me go back, and I'll keep this as brief as possible, but let's go back to 1948. Prior to 1948, what the Army's policy was on leadership was that leaders are born and not made. And what we need to do within the Army is use a sifter, and we need to sift out who are the great leaders and who just is not going to cut it. That was the idea. Leaders are born and not made. Well, we had a lot of really great leaders that went through a lot of leadership experiences during World War II. And emerging from World War II, we said, well, that's not the case. I saw a lot of leaders that started out and they weren't that great, but through development, through the experiences that they got, they actually became much better leaders. And so we changed. We changed our idea from leaders are born, not made, to some leaders are born, others can be developed into great leaders. And that's really the first time in our history that we acknowledge that, at least according to doctrine. So the model that they put out at the time was based on traits, principles, and then techniques. Those are the three words that they used. We use be, know, do, now. What they said was that there are some traits, some inherent traits that we want to see and develop in our leaders. There are some principles, overarching principles of to army leadership. And then there's also some techniques that everybody should try to observe in order to be good leaders. We're back in 1948. In the intervening years from 1948 to 1983, different ideas came up, different cycles of these traits, principles, and then techniques. They were developed, they came up, they changed a little bit, and we came up with some different values that we thought were important for Army leaders to have. Well, let's jump forward to 1983, and that's when the Center for Army Leadership came about. We also got the Be No Do model. And then from there, the Center for Army Leadership has been responsible for helping define, conduct research, and then integrate the findings of that research into the doctrine. So the doctrine that we manage now is ADP 6-22, which is the Army Leadership in the Profession, and then FM 6-22. So, and that takes us where we are today. We have our two doctrinal publications, and then we also have our counseling publication, which is ATP 6-22.1. So we have a variety of assessments that we do as well, which allow you to take a look at yourself or take a look at your subordinates, take a look at your organization, and then find out where you measure up according to what the Army wants from its leaders.
And we're going to talk a little bit more about doctrine, but the point I think that I would like my audience to kind of take out of this part of the conversation is all of the Army doctrine now that's about leadership is based off of the assumption, the principle that people can develop and can improve their leadership skills. We're not just static. We're not just fixed. We all can get better and we can become better leaders if we choose to. And that's kind of the mission that Cal has, is to provide techniques and publications so that people can improve their leadership skills.
That's right.
Okay, so let's talk about a little bit about the future, about the vision, the future vision for an organization like Cal. What's the need in the future? Do you anticipate that an organization like Cal can provide back to the Army?
So when we came together as an organization, we looked at our vision. We tried to figure out for the next 100 years, what should the Center for Army Leadership be doing? What does the Army need from the Center for Army Leadership? And what we came up with was that what the Center for Army Leadership needs to be is the premier organization for the Army when it comes to leaders, leader development in the profession. So what we had to set up and what we need to continue to do is that we need to use science and data to create the reports, to create the feedback, to inform Army senior leaders, to inform Army organizations, and then to inform individuals on where they stand as far as their strengths and weaknesses in leadership and the profession. Then, utilizing that feedback that we have, we need to develop the tools so that people can improve. And then we also need to make sure that we can communicate well the Army's message to the leaders within the organization. So that is what we are set up to do.
And let's talk a little bit about doctrine. I find this a fascinating topic to talk about the Center for Army Leadership. What is your role in developing doctrine and how do you do it? What's the process that you use to develop doctrine?
So what doctrine is it's the baseline concepts under which the entire Army is going to operate. So when it comes to the profession and leadership, Those sort of ideas come from our Army senior leaders. They say, this is what we want from the Army. This is what, how we want leaders to be, and this is what we want from the profession. So the first thing that we get when we are looking at our doctrine is we will get some proposed changes from the Army's senior leaders. They'll give those changes, what they think needs to be integrated into our doctrine, 6-22, and its associated series. And then what we will do is we'll do some research. We'll research to further define whatever the concept is that our Army senior leaders want integrated into leadership in the profession. We will further define what that means. Then we'll provide feedback to the Army senior leaders. And if they like the definition and if they like how it's going to integrate into that concept, then we will put it into doctrine. Once that's done, then we get to do the fun part, which is taking that change and then figuring out, well, so if the Army wants this from its leaders, how do we assess it? How do we provide feedback tools for people so that they can say, this person is doing well or they're doing poorly in this aspect of leadership? So we get to develop some tools, and then we get to integrate those into the FM, also into ATPs, and then into handbooks. So providing feedback tools to the force so that they can then see themselves according to whatever the change was in the doctrine and then find ways to improve. So 6-22, ADP 6-22 tells us what the Army wants from the profession and leaders. And then we take that, we take what they want, and then we integrate it into the FM, which tells them how to do it, how to change, how to become a better leader.
And one thing about doctrine that a point that I'd like to make, and just to get your insight into this, is when I was young, when I was a lieutenant or a captain, you get doctrine down and you just maybe think that, where does this come from? And then as you mature and then you get a chance to comment on doctrine, we realize that this is our doctrine. This is not something that's just given to us. And we have a chance to comment when these documents are being staffed. And so I think it's important when those pieces of doctrine come around and we're asked to comment on them, that we do comment on them. We live with whatever doctrine we produce. Do you agree with that? That's an important thing, is that when doctrine's coming around and we're asked for comments to jump in and say what we think about it.
I couldn't agree more with that statement. When we look at the profession, there is one of the roles that we have within the profession. All of us, we have three roles. I'll say that up front. We have to be honorable servants. We need to be military experts, Army experts. And then we also have to be stewards of the profession. So what you're talking about there is an activity that we need to participate in to be stewards of the profession. What being a steward of the profession allows us to do is ensure that the Army can win the fight today, but they can also win the fight in the future. So if doctrine is changing, if that base document that is going to serve as the foundation for how we fight and how we serve comes in front of you, and you see that it is not going to allow us to win the fight today and win the fight tomorrow, then you have an obligation as a professional to provide your feedback to make the Army stronger and by that protect the nation.
Let's talk about the leadership requirements model. And I'll let you correct me because I've heard it called the leader requirements model, but I think it is the leadership requirements model.
That's correct.
What is the purpose of that model? How has it developed? Kind of how has it changed over the years?
When we're talking about doctrine and how, you know, these things come down and nobody seems to know where they came from, what I can tell you about the leadership requirements model is that this model is grounded in historical experience and determinations of what works best for the Army. Not just what works best for the Army as far as like, oh, this just happens to work best for the Army. But what we did was we defined what we wanted from the profession, and then we determined that these are the attributes and the competencies that we want every single leader to display. It's changed over time. We've added a few, we've taken some away, but they are still arranged in attributes and competencies. So if I can, I'll hit very briefly what attributes and competencies are. All right, so attributes are the characteristics that we want that are internal to a leader. So, for example, we want a leader to live the Army values. We want a leader to behave ethically. That means following the laws and regulations, but then also having a sense of what's right and wrong, morally what's right and wrong. That's what we want. Those are the things that are underneath attributes. Then those things are internal. They change very slowly, but they can change. All right, that's attributes, things that are internal. Now, the other side of the leadership requirements model are the competencies. Competencies are skills and behaviors that can be taught and can be changed relatively quickly. All right, so competencies are sort of external ways that we display ourselves as leaders. Attributes are things that we hold inside. So character, our intelligence, our military expertise, those things that we hold in our mind and in our hearts are our attributes. Competencies are those things that we display to others in the open and can change relatively quickly.
An attribute is, that's something you're saying that's maybe a little more deep-seated, and it's shown to others through my actions. And then a competency is maybe a behavior, like active listening, something like that. That's a kind of a competency.
So as some examples, so for attributes, they're split into the be and the know portion of the leadership requirements model. We're talking about character, we're talking about presence, and we're talking about intellect. If you think about those sort of things, those are the things that you have internal to yourself. Underneath character, it would be living the Army values, displaying empathy, living by the service ethos in the sense, in the case of DA civilians, having discipline and humility. If you think about those are things that we hold inside of us. They're part of our character. Under presence, there's that confidence, your military bearing, or in the sense of DA civilians, they also need to keep their composure as well. Confidence, resilience, again, internal things that we hold inside of ourselves. So that's just some examples of those things that fall under attributes. Under competencies, those are split up into the do portion, leads, develops, and achieves. So those ones you can see, those activities that happen on a regular basis that leaders need to display. They're not held inside. You can easily observe somebody displaying those competencies.
Yeah, and those are behavioral in nature. In other words, I can see people doing those things. I can see the behaviors in someone else. And in the classroom, I can show you the technique. I can show you the doctrine and say, this is something that you can do that will have an effect in your organization. And like you're saying, those are things that maybe we can change a little more quickly.
That's right.
In terms of behaviors and what people do, the attributes maybe change a little slower. And I can see for myself how when I was younger, maybe I approached problems in a certain way. And then over time, especially when you start talking about the profession and learning what it means to be a professional, some of those things internally change maybe a little bit slower. I can kind of see that in myself.
That is a great point. As you said, it's those attributes that change slower. And you can, if you look back, you'll see the change in yourself when it comes to those attributes. One that I saw in myself, and this has been throughout my Army career, was confidence. Confidence is, I remember being a high school and college student and just being so self-conscious and really not, like, thinking everybody was thinking bad thoughts about me, thinking that I don't know what I'm doing, and having a lot of difficulty displaying confidence. And then through the years working on those things, now I'm able to display far more confidence, but it took a long time to change those things. It didn't happen as quickly as some of those things that you will see under the competencies.
Absolutely, because people come up and give you feedback and you say, well, I don't agree with that. I don't think I did a good job on that at all.
Yeah.
And then they say, no, you did. And then as you get that, that's the importance of feedback, because it helps develop confidence in others. Hey, you did a great job on that. What you did was very helpful. And then that makes people more confident, I think.
For sure. May I make a point here about the leadership requirements model? And what I do want to make sure that we get across is that the leadership requirements model is actually for all Army leaders. It is not just for our uniformed service members. It is for our Department of the Army civilians as well. If you pick up ADP 6-22, there will be some military language in the ADP. But if you read through it, you will, whether you're an Army civilian or a uniform member, you will get a good feeling about what the Army means by those things. And you will be able to see it does not just apply to the military. And when you go to FM 6-22 to try to figure out how to either assess those that work underneath you, or to assess how you can improve in any of these either attributes or competencies, you will see that the techniques that are available, the studying that's available, the ways to improve, they apply to everybody. They are not just for uniformed service members, but also apply to our civilian Army professionals as well.
And I think that's such a great point. And I think it's important for folks out in our audience to know is that this leadership doctrine that we have is written, there is a military tinge to it, absolutely, because of that's the department that we're in. But your doctrine does do a great job of including civilians, because I've read through 6-22 many different times, and it's very inclusive of the Army civilians, which I think is important.
That is another benefit within the Center for Army Leadership of having so many DA civilians that work, do research, and then help develop the doctrine. And that is because they are civilian Army professionals. They don't want to write doctrine that for leadership that's supposed to apply to everybody that does not apply to them. So that's another benefit of having our Department of the Army civilians that actually run a majority of what happens at the Center for Army Leadership.
Army civilians used to be mainly technicians, guys that worked at range control or CIF, but that guy that wouldn't accept your canteen cover because it had too many threads hanging off of it. Civilians are now becoming more and more a part of the leadership of organizations, and that's another reason why it's good and helpful and useful that our leadership doctrine also includes Army civilians. Let's talk about change, a little bit about the future. We're always in a period of change, I think, if you're talking about studying warfare and studying leadership. But just how does your organization help the Army anticipate change? How change will affect leadership principles, or will it affect leadership principles? Are those principles enduring? Are there some principles that are enduring?
6-22 talks about how change is one of those constants that we're going to experience within the Army. If you think about, we have that profession of arms, those that wear the uniform, changes is constant. We change out leadership. We change out where we're doing our mission. We deploy, we come back, we do permanent changes of station. We also have our civilian Army professionals. The changes that they experience, they experience those changes in budget. They experience those changes in organization. They experience changes in programs. Some get shut down and new ones get stood up. So they experience that change just as much as those within uniform. So the doctrine has been written to give guidance to leaders, whether they're in uniform or are DA civilians, on how to manage change. The leadership requirements model has plenty of language in there to talk about leading your organizations through change. So specifically to our civilian Army professionals, let's take a look at what their roles are according to 6-22. All right. So civilian Army professionals have three roles that are laid out in 6-22. The first is establishing and executing Army policies. You will not find an Army policy out there in the Army that does not have a civilian army professional leader that has either touched it, reviewed it, gets it through the wickets of approval. Our civilian army professionals are out there executing policy and helping write policy. Then we have army civilian professionals managing army programs, projects, and systems. I do not know of a single program, project, or army system that is either not directed by a civilian army professional or has a deputy. And then a majority that operate those programs, projects, or systems that are civilian army professionals. You're not going to find one out there. Finally, the third role that they have is operating activities and facilities for Army equipment support, research, and technical work. I talked about my role at the Army Corps of Engineers. 3-4 military and everybody else was civilian Army professionals. They are fulfilling those roles. They are all over the Army. There's not a single system, activity, project, program where you're not going to come across civilian Army professional leaders. In the current changes that we're experiencing, there are changes in focus. There are changes in funding. There are changes in organizational structure. That is going to affect our civilian Army leaders as they lead their organizations through change. So the question then is, where can they look to for some guidance on how to affect that change? And let me just talk in some of the language of the leadership requirements model through the attributes and the competencies. If we just go around the leadership requirements model, there's language there that gives guidance to our civilian Army professional leaders as they are leading their organizations through change. If it's all right, we'll go through that.
Please do. Yes, absolutely.
So first, let me just start with character. So how should our civilian Army professionals be leading with character through change? And if you look at the language in 6-22, I just pulled out a few things. We need to lead this change ethically, meaning we know that there's regulations and we know that there's right and wrong things to do as we lead through change. We need to be doing that as leaders of character. Also, if you're going to look at presence, well, we need to keep our composure and we need to be resilient. Our subordinates are looking at us. And if we are flying off the handle because of the stress of these changes and we are not being resilient, understanding that we're going to get through these things, well, then we're not being good leaders of presence. If we continue along to intellect, one of the great things about civilian Army professionals is that they provide capability, stability, and continuity. If you look at our uniformed members, we change out every 2-3 years. And the people that are really there that have that continuity, that consistency, are our civilian Army professionals. Many of our civilian Army professionals have managed change before. They've been through these changes before. They have that long view of what's going on, and they can be not only resilient, knowing that we're going to get to the other side of it, but they can use the experience that they've had in changes in the past and apply it to what we're doing now. They have that expertise that they need to apply to the current situation. So they know the best way to make these changes, not to resist them, but to enable the organization to do it. That is the way that our civilian Army professionals can display their intellect, using those experiences and applying changes. Continuing around, how are we supposed to lead? So going to the competencies, leading, what guidance do we have from the leadership requirements model? Well, the key as we are leading through change, let's make sure that we communicate, maintain trust within our organizations as we do this change. That's some language that comes from leads. We have a responsibility to ensure that we communicate, not just higher, but also lower to our subordinates about what these changes mean so that they can make the best decisions for themselves and also adjust their work for the new changes. Moving on to develops. All right, some of the language from the LRM is we need to make sure that the decisions that we are making make the best use of the resources that we are given. And And this is very difficult in these times of change. We need to put the needs of the Army as a whole ahead of our organization and ourselves. That is very difficult, especially when we as professionals, and I work with a lot of very committed civilian Army professionals, when we are committed to our programs, understanding that the changes may result in some personnel changes and they may result in organizational changes. And we need to keep that in mind as we are developing ourselves, developing our subordinates, and developing our organizations. We need to keep the best interests of the Army in mind as we do it. It's very difficult, but that's some of the guidance there for developing. And then finally, achieves, hitting the last of the competencies, achieves. We need to ensure that whatever changes we make, we're setting clear priorities, that we are reallocating our resources and ensure if we cannot achieve the mission, that we are talking to our higher and we are setting clear priorities about what is important to our subordinates so that if a mission is going to fail because we don't have the people or the resources, that we are doing it in a way that doesn't allow for total mission failure. So that's just going around the leadership requirements model, pulling out just a few things that are there. And if you listen to that, it actually tells you how a leader is supposed to be leading through this change. And I hope that's useful. That language that I just talked in, that's the language of 6-22 and FM 6-22. And you can tell it's not just for green suiters. It also is language that we can apply to our civilian Army professionals.
And I want to talk about one of the products or one of the things that you offer that I've heard a lot of people talk about, and a lot of people have talked about how useful it is. It used to be called, and I'm going to use this term because people might recognize it. It used to be called MSAF, Multi-Source Assessment Feedback, and now it's called Leader 360. And from your perspective, what's the workings of that? What does it do? And what's the value of Leader 360?
All right. So Leader 360, as you said, it was the multi-source assessment and feedback tool and it has changed. The name changed to Leader 360, but the concept is the same. What that tool allows a leader to do is to seek feedback from superiors, from peers, and subordinate. That's the 360 aspect of it all around, to receive feedback and how they are doing in being a leader. So the feedback that a leader will receive will be in the language of the leadership requirements model. And what happens is you will select superiors, peers, and subordinates, and a survey will be sent out to them. Those people that you have selected will then provide feedback, anonymous feedback, to you on how you're doing on your leadership skills. There are the survey, there's a scale where they can say whether you need improvement or, you know, neutral, or it's something that you're strong in. There are many questions that address that. And then there's a free text portion where they can tell you some things that you need to improve on and some strengths that you have in a free text box. You'll get a report back on that, and it tells you how you've done, and it also has those free text box printouts of the feedback that your subordinates, peers, and supervisors have given you. It's anonymous, so you don't have to. Nobody has to worry about, my boss is going to be angry because I provided candid, honest feedback. What this tool does, what we believe for leader development, is you have to have some sort of assessment. You have to assess how you're doing in leadership. There has to be some sort of assessment. From that, you need to receive some feedback. It doesn't do any good to take the 360, get your feedback, and never look at it. So you have to actually receive the feedback. Then you have to spend some time in reflection. So you have to reflect on what sort of feedback did I receive? What did they tell me? And then you need to develop a plan of action on those things that you have, that you believe that you need to change. So what the Center for Army Leadership has done with the 360 has actually provided that tool, the ability to receive feedback, gives you the opportunity to reflect on that feedback and then develop a plan of action. The tool that you would then use for with that Leader 360 to develop your plan of action, it actually happens to be FM6-22. So you discover your weaknesses, you're not quite sure what to do about them, you can open up FM6-22 to the area within the leadership requirements model where you got feedback that you're weak, and you can find those things to do to either receive additional feedback, to study, and then practice to make yourself better.
That report that leader gets back, that belongs to that leader. That's an important point. In other words, if I'm a senior leader, I can suggest or tell someone, I want you to get this done, but I'm not supposed to ask them to discuss the results that they got. Am I correct on that?
Yes, that's right. So the idea behind that, you are protected by 600-100. This is a leader development process. This is a leader development assessment. It is not for talent management, meaning your boss can't say, go take a Leader 360, bring it back to me. I'm going to use it for your assessment here at the end of the year. They cannot do it. And the reason for that is, if you were going to do that, who are you going to select to give you feedback? Your buds, your best friend.
Right.
You're going to seek out the people that you know are going to just give you the best rating possible. You're not going to get candid feedback. The idea being, it's for you. It is for self-development. You own the results. The intent is for you to take that feedback, reflect on it, come up with a plan of action, and improve. You can share some of those things with your boss if you would like to, but your boss does not own the results. You own the results.
So I could choose to share my results.
Right.
If I wanted to, but I'm not obligated to. It's really kind of unethical and goes against the purpose of that activity.
That's right.
If we try to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Have you done that? Did you go through one of those?
Yes. And also as a battalion commander, you have other opportunities like the command climate surveys that we do to receive feedback as well. I will tell you that when you receive that feedback, before you open it up, it's always a little bit of, you feel a little tightness in your chest because you're about to look into the mirror and you don't know if you have spinach in your teeth or not. And that's what this assessment is supposed to be telling you, is do you have weaknesses? How do you actually look as a leader to the people around you and underneath you?
And you kind of implied this earlier, but with something like Leader 360, it does no good to send it to people that you don't know are going to give you some good truth back.
That's right.
Sometimes it's harsh, sometimes it's brutal, but we don't want just brutality. We don't want
to
just be torn down. It needs to be something that I can kind of see and use and see a way forward. I think when people get, honest feedback and it's on target, I think they know it when they read it. They kind of say, yep, that's kind of me. And I know that about myself.
Here are two things I'd like to say about it. The free text portion, I think, is what people are really most concerned about. Just so you know, I just filled out a Leader 360 for somebody that sent one to me to fill out for them. And the questions are asked, the free text at the end, it says, what is this leader doing well for their organization? And then what are some areas where the leader needs to improve? Those questions are not asked in a way said, hey, open up real here. Give this person both barrels. It's what is this leader doing well? And what can this leader do to improve their organization? Those are how the questions are asked. And I do believe that people, when asked for feedback, they do abide by the spirit of the questions, which is improvement. So that's some feedback there.
Yeah, and I also like the fact that it focuses on actions.
That's right.
What they're doing. Because I can change my actions if you say, well, you do this. You come in every day and do this, that, and that. And it's not helpful. Okay, I can choose not to do those things. If everybody says it's not helpful and I can see that, then I can change my behavior. If someone tells me what my behavior is and what impact it's having. So, Colonel Brandon, we're just about out of time, but I wanted to ask you about one more thing that we were talking about before we started the recording, and it's a book that you were talking about. If I got the title right, it's Beyond Entrepreneurship 2.0. What is it about that book that you found useful, and how has it helped you as the director of the Center for Army Leadership?
One of the questions that you had asked was about using the leadership requirements model, using doctrine with civilian Army professionals to guide through change. And we talked about how to use the leadership requirements to actually lead. But in order to lead, you have to know where you're going. You have to provide that purpose, direction, and motivation. And that can only come about if you know where you're going. What Beyond Entrepreneurship does, and that's the book is by Jim Collins. What it helps a leader do is start by defining the vision that they need for their organization. So a vision looking at 100 years out. What is this organization supposed to be doing for the next 100 years? Then it helps break down into a mission. So if we say the vision is what we're supposed to do for the next 100 years, the mission then says over the next whatever period of time it is, 1 year, 3 year, 5 years, how are we going to make progress towards achieving that vision? Then it talks about how do you break that down into objectives, things that we need to achieve in order to fulfill the mission and get us closer to achieving the vision. It is a very useful book because it puts it very simply, and it's a step-by-step and how to do it. I utilized the techniques in that when I was developing the vision with my division chiefs, when we came together to develop the Center for Army Leadership vision and then develop the mission and our objectives. We used a lot of techniques from that book in order to come up with it. I think it's a very useful tool, especially for those perhaps in new leadership positions where they are not quite sure what their organization is supposed to be doing. Reading that book will help lead them through developing vision, mission, and objectives and communicating that to subordinates.
And so, Lieutenant Colonel Nathan Brandon, I really want to thank you for giving up your time today and coming over and talking about the Center for Army Leadership. Thank you so much for being a guest today on Leader Up.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. And so, Leader Up audience, what did you hear today that kind of piques your interest? Have you read, have you looked at ADP 622? Do you know what's in it? Do you know for yourself what your own personal leadership skills are? Are you aware of some things that maybe you personally need to work on to become a better leader? And so think about those things and reflect on that. And I want to take an opportunity right now to tell my audience that Leader Up is going to take a little bit of a break. We don't know how long we're going to not publish, but we are going to be away for a short period of time. Don't know how long it's going to be, but I'm going to do everything I can to keep this podcast rolling because I enjoy talking to y'all. And it's such a great blessing when I'm in a lunch and learn or something like that and somebody types in, "Hey, I love Leader Up. Keep it going." We want to keep this podcast going. We just don't know when we'll be back on the air, but stay tuned, subscribe to our YouTube page, and join us again for another edition of Leader Up.
As always, if you have any questions or feedback or would like to learn more about our podcast, please check the description for our email and for our website. Thanks for listening.